Down to daily reflection. February 3rd, 2026. Hey, it's Paul. Tuesday, February 3rd. I've been thinking about constraints today, not the kind that block you, the kind that clarify. There's a difference, and most people miss it. First thing I noticed, limitations sometimes solve problems that flexibility couldn't. Here's what happened. I hit an API wall in one of my projects. The system only supports percentage-based modifiers, not absolute values. My first reaction was frustration. This limits what I can build. But then something interesting happened. That constraint answered a product question I'd been avoiding for weeks. Should certain features rotate on a schedule or accumulate permanently? I'd been going back and forth. Both seemed reasonable. The constraint eliminated one option entirely. And suddenly, the answer was obvious. Accumulation. No rotation logic. No expiration tracking. No active versus archived states to manage. The limitation didn't block the product. It told me what the product should be. This happens in organizations all the time. Budget constraints force prioritization that unlimited resources never would. Headcount limits make clear which roles are actually essential. Deadline pressure reveals which features matter and which were nice-to-haves dressed up as requirements. The dangerous state isn't having constraints, it's having flexibility without the discipline to make decisions anyway. Flexibility lets you punt. Constraints force your hand. Sometimes that's exactly what you need. Not more options, but fewer. I built a scheduling system this week that does the same thing. Before automation, my publishing cadence was I publish sometimes. Vague, comfortable, useless for planning. The system demanded I encode it as configuration, Tuesday newsletters, Thursday and Saturday blog posts, specific slots for social content. The constraint must be precise enough for code to follow, improve the thinking. Now the cadence is explicit and auditable. I can see what I committed to. I can see when I'm falling behind. Flexibility let me avoid that clarity. The constraint delivered it. Second thing, fallback logic is where systems go to die quietly. I found a bug this week that had been corrupting data for weeks. Weeks. No crash, no warning, no indication anything was wrong. The system had a reasonable looking fallback. If a value doesn't match expected types, just convert it to a string. Seems harmless. Except when the value is structured data, a dictionary, a nested object, that conversion produces garbage. Debug output that looks like any hashable key. Value, and that garbage gets written back to the file as a string. Structured metadata becomes noise, silently. The fallback looked safe, it wasn't. This is the delegation problem every manager faces, just expressed in code. Which decisions can happen independently, which require approval? The answer depends on reversibility and consequence, not capability. A system that handles routine cases automatically but escalates edge cases is well designed. A system that handles everything automatically, including cases it doesn't understand, is a time bomb. I saw the same pattern in my continuous integration setup. Configuration errors didn't crash the build. They produced mysterious failures that looked like infrastructure problems. Wrong directory, file not found. Wrong network protocol, authentication failed. Each fallback turned a simple configuration mistake into a runtime mystery. The system kept running, just incorrectly. Here's the principle. Graceful degradation sounds good until you realize it means fails in ways you won't notice until much later. Sometimes you want the system to crash. Sometimes the crash is the feature. It's the signal that something needs attention before damage accumulates. Every organization has fallback logic like this, the process that handles exceptions by routing them to a general inbox where they disappear. The approval workflow that auto-approves after 48 hours of no response, the escalation path that dead-ends at someone who left the company, these aren't safeguards, they're ways of hiding problems until they compound. Third thing, stateless beats, stateful, almost every time. I had to transform content this week, remove something from one output format while preserving it in another. First approach, modify the source, generate output, restore the source. Stateful, error prone. If the system crashes mid-transform, you're left with corrupted source and no way to recover. Second approach, generate both outputs from the same source, then filter one stream differently. Stateless, same input always produces same output. No state to track, no cleanup on failure, no did we remember to restore, anxiety, the data corruption bug I mentioned, same root cause. The system modified an in-memory representation, then passed that corrupted structure to the save logic. Stateful transformation. Once the corruption happened, the save function faithfully serialized garbage. It was doing its job perfectly, just on poisoned input. This applies way beyond code. Think about how decisions flow through organizations. Stateful processes accumulate context that isn't written down. We decided X because of Y, but Y changed and nobody updated X. Stateless processes derive decisions from current conditions. They might be slower, but they don't carry hidden assumptions forward. The question isn't whether state is bad, it's whether you're tracking it explicitly or letting it accumulate invisibly. Invisible state is technical debt, it's organizational debt. It's the gap between what you think the system does and what it actually does. Fourth thing, your tests only enforce assumptions you articulated. I got my test suite to 75% passing this week. 3 of 4 jobs green. Feels like progress, but that last 25% matters more than the first 75%. The passing test check narrow contracts. Does this function return the right value? The failing tests check emergent behavior. Does email delivery work? Do the JavaScript components initialize? Does the asset pipeline run before tests execute? Those failures expose implicit assumptions. Nobody wrote them down, so nobody tested them, so they broke silently. Emails will be delivered in test mode. JavaScript controllers will load. Assets will be compiled. Each one seemed obvious. None of them were specified. The data corruption bug survived for weeks because test cases used simple inputs. Complex nested structures only appeared when real users configured real metadata. The assumption, fallback to string is safe, was never tested against dictionaries because nobody thought to test it. The assumption was invisible until it failed. This is the hard problem in any complex system. You can only test for mistakes you articulated clearly enough to encode. The dangerous bugs live in the assumptions you didn't know you were making. Type systems help, contracts help, but ultimately you're always one invisible assumption away from silent failure. So here's the question I'm sitting with. How do you surface assumptions before they break? Constraints help, they force articulation. Crashes help, they make failures visible. Stateless transformations help, they reduce hidden context, but none of these are complete solutions. They're just ways of shrinking the gap between what you specified and what you assumed. The gap never closes entirely. The work is making it smaller, one articulated assumption at a time. That's it for today. Talk to you tomorrow.